Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. On the housing front, demand in this country is seriously outpacing supply. Inventory is tight. Prices are up. People aren't moving, so they're renovating. Contractors can't keep up. Shows like Love It or List It and Fixer Upper are all the rage. This hour on Point, America renovates. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Are you glued to the home remodeling shows these days? Are you doing it, renovating? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Later in this hour, we'll talk with the general contractor from HGTV's Love It or List It. But first, joining me from New York is Laura Cusisto, reporter for The Wall Street Journal, covering housing and the economy. Laura, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you here.
Yeah, thanks so much.
What's going on? Americans pouring record sums into home improvement is your latest story. Why?
So it's both a sign of a very hot and also a somewhat broken housing market. So what's going on here is a lot of Americans are looking around, seeing what's out there, looking in their neighborhood and saying, wow, prices have gone up so much over the last few years, and what I can afford to buy just isn't really that exciting. So I'd rather stay put an addition on my current home, knock out that wall, get my dream kitchen, rather than venturing out into this market where there are going to be 80 people at an open house and houses are going to go for $30,000 over asking price. And so we're seeing this lead to this real bright spot in the housing market, this record home renovation boom.
You're quoting Harvard's Joint Center for Housing Studies saying Americans will spend $316 billion on home remodeling this year. That's up a lot from a year earlier, and that's got contractors tight and all the rest. Why are houses in such short supply? Why is inventory so tight? I mean, the suggestion here is that if they had options, they might take them. They might just buy something else, but they don't or can't. Why not?
Yeah. So, I mean, just to give you a feel for the scope of the problem, we have about as many homes for sale as there were in 1994, but we have 63 million more people in the U.S.
Wow.
So we're just not seeing...
That's crazy.
It's crazy. And it gives you a feel for why things feel so frenzied right now. And as part of that, too, because we're not seeing new homes built, the housing stock as a result is aging. The average home that people are buying now is 30 years old compared to 15 years old a little while ago. So that's just a huge change. There are a few things going on, but the crux of it is really this is a hangover from the housing bust. What's happened is builders are just a lot more cautious than they used to be. A lot of builders went out of business and never came back. And so we're just seeing home construction way below normal levels historically. And that's a big part of what's leading to a crunch. And another part of it is we're seeing baby boomers stay in their homes longer. They're healthier. They don't feel like the kind of people who live in a senior living community. So they're just saying, you know, I've built my dream home. I don't feel like I'm a senior citizen, so I'm going to stay here for a while longer. But that makes it harder for younger people to buy into the market.
Well, look at that. Millennials also, of course, then when they do get in, they may have to buy something that needs a lot of fixing up, and that means more renovation. But I'm still trying to figure out why is there that much fear? We're a decade after the housing bust, more than now. Are contractors that scared of building new homes, or are there restrictions on where and what they can build? What are the real restricting factors?
Yeah, that's another thing that's worth talking about is what happened is a lot of communities after the housing bust looked around and said, we let builders build all of these new homes in our communities, and then they sat empty, and it dragged down property values, and it was bad for the tax base. And so we're going to be a lot more cautious about what we let you build and how much we let you build. And so we've seen communities layer on more and more regulations. There's all kinds of talk about these regulations, about how far you can build from where birds have their nests. costs, and you know, and a lot of times they're requiring builders now to put in more of the infrastructure themselves. So it's just we're making it harder and harder to build, and that creates an affordability crunch at this time when we're seeing these sort of two big gorillas in the room. We're seeing both baby boomers, this huge generation that's still owning homes, and then millennials, another huge generation that is just starting to get into home ownership, and it's just creating this huge crunch.
Everybody wants to renovate. Bottom of the home renovation market, 2009, you report Americans spent $222 billion on renovations, about a third, about 30% less than today. Of course, in inflation-adjusted terms, it was still not where it was, but then everything got so whipped up before the housing bust. What if you renovate, you've got to have some confidence in home prices. Are people confident that prices are going to stay up? Where are they compared to the peak before the bust, Laura?
So prices are back up at a new record if you don't adjust for inflation. And so that's a big part of what is giving people confidence. Obviously, nobody in a place like Las Vegas or Phoenix was renovating their home 5 years ago when it wasn't even worth what they paid for it. That just didn't make a lot of sense. And so definitely what we're seeing is prices back up at a new record. They're growing 5 to 6% a year, which is way faster than incomes. And so it gives people this sense. We all remember what it felt like 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. It gives people this sense that prices are just going to keep going up and up. So if you spend that $75,000 to gut renovate your home, there's a feeling, there's a confidence that people are going to get that back.
And what are people doing if they've got that home? What are they doing if they can't find a new home? Laura Casisto with The Wall Street Journal is with us. We've got callers on this. Rolando in Atlanta. Rolando, thanks for calling. You're on the air. What do you see?
Hi, Tom. Yeah, I definitely want to echo that fact. There's short inventory right now. And what we're seeing is that people are staying put. They understand that if they do put their house on the market, they might not find something else comparable, or it's just going to be heck expensive and it just doesn't make sense. So people are remodeling, have a couple homes in the same neighborhood in Clarkston, Georgia. As soon as I put a sign in the yard, didn't even list it. It was under contract. So that's kind of what we're feeling here.
And so do you, if people get stir crazy in their home, they wish they could buy or change their home, but they can't find one to buy. Are they turning around then and pumping money into their existing home, Rolando? Are you seeing that?
Sometimes. It depends on their unique situation and what their limitations are.
Right.
But for the most part, yeah, my contractors are busy, busy, busy. I mean, they're at least 2 weeks out just to do an estimate.
What's popular? What are people doing with their homes? If they're frustrated, can't get out, can't move on, they decide to renovate, what are they doing, Rolando?
Opening them up, just like you said earlier. The space, open floor plan is definitely in. If you can add square footage to a mid-century home, those mid-century modernized homes are what's selling, at least here in Atlanta.
Mid-century modern. Boy, that's been the theme for a while now. Rolando, I appreciate your call from Orlando. Laura, please stand by. Brett Hunter joins us right now from Boynton Beach in Florida, chief economist at Home Advisor, National Homeowner Services and Improvement website. Brett Hunter, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. It's good to be on with you.
What do you see driving all this home renovation that's now underway?
Well, as we've been talking about, there's a severe shortage of housing for sale. So people who are looking to buy a house find it very difficult to find a house. And so oftentimes, instead of accepting that longer commute to buy a house that's further out that stays within their price range, they are saying, I don't want to fight it out in the marketplace against these bidding wars and the people bidding so high. So they're staying in their home and they're fixing it up. And in my mind, there is a bit of some converging forces, almost a perfect storm for home improvement right now. Number one, the rise in equity. And we've seen a doubling of the average homeowner's equity in the last 5 years.
This is after a lot of people were just plain underwater for a long time.
Right, right. So now instead of 12 million people underwater, there's only 3 million people underwater. So what that allows people to do is to move. Some people were stuck in their homes. They couldn't sell it and pay off the house, pay off the mortgage with the proceeds from the sale.
Yep.
So they were stuck. And then people feel richer now, so they feel like I can justify splurging a little bit, indulging myself a bit. And of course, it's easier to get home equity loans and lines of credit when you have equity. Combine that with the tight supply we've been talking about and the fact that, as Laura and I had talked about a week ago, the millennials and the boomers are the two 900-pound gorillas. The millennials are increasingly buying old homes, and then they have to fix them up. And then you have the baby boomers who are spending more on luxury items right now, and in another few years, they'll start spending on mobility-related improvements for their homes.
I mean, Laura, what happened? I remember a few years back, people were thinking, well, boomers are going to start to move out of their big old homes en masse. You might even see prices really come down because that the boomer demand would turn to smaller or more warmer climes. What happened to that?
Yeah, I think especially one of the ideas that I heard a lot about the boomers was that they were all going to buy condos downtown. They were all going to be these sort of hip downtown urban dwellers. And we haven't seen that happen in statistically significant numbers. We've seen a little bit of it. But what I hear just anecdotally is that because people are healthy and a lot of them want to stay close to their children and their children are starting to move out to the suburbs, and also a lot of them are quite affluent and a lot of them have a lot of stuff. And one thing about sort of downtown condos or that condo in Florida is there's not a lot of room for all your stuff. And so I think a lot of them, certainly what I'm hearing, is they're electing to stay put, wanting to stay closer to their children, wanting to kind of keep that house. They're still healthy enough to live in it. That's not to say that we don't see people moving down south and moving downtown, but I don't think we're seeing it in the numbers that we expected to. And I think the final reason is because they're also then having to compete in this market. A lot of boomers, if they're downsizing, are looking at the sort of similar price range to millennials, right? They're looking at that kind of starter home. And that's the most competitive segment of the market right now. And so I think that's just another thing that's stopping people from moving.
Brad, I'm looking at a report here that maybe 60% of boomers are planning to stay in their current homes for the next 5 years or so. How does that compare with historical trends, given that they're moving into their 60s?
Right. So they are staying put more than in prior years. But, you know, the other part of it is that 5 to 6 bedroom house that they may have bought a few years back isn't what's in high demand these days. So, that's not where the shortage is concentrated. The shortage we're talking about is really more in the 3 bedroom sort of, 1900 square foot kind of range where the middle class wants to live.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS ConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
Hi, it's Tom. Before we get back to the show, I wanted to tell you to be sure and stay with us till the very end of this podcast for a preview of Freak Out and Carry On. It's WBUR's new podcast that addresses today's politics through a historical lens. Give it a listen, and thanks. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about home renovation booming as Americans stay put, can't, won't move. They're fixing up the house, changing the fixtures, blowing out the walls, mixing it up if they can afford it. And no small number can. Overall spending on this expected to hit more than $316 billion this year. That is up and up pretty sharply. Laura Casisto is with us, reporter with the Wall Street Journal covering all this. You can read her story at our website, onpointradio.org. Brad Hunter is with us, chief economist at Home Advisor, the National Homeowner Services Improvement website, with us from Boynton Beach, Florida. You can join us as well. So are you renovating, remodeling? What's your strategy? Is it for pleasure? Is it for resale, for a growing family, for a shrinking family? Where are you getting your inspiration? Are you flipping through the magazines, addicted to HGTV, going on house tours, Pinterest? What's your question for our real estate pros? our contractor who will join us in just a moment, Eric Aramita. He's general contractor for HGTV's Love It or List It. Here he is with the general contractor there with Love It or List It, having a little sort of back and forth with the show's designer, Hillary Farr, about that open plan.
You want this wall down?
Yeah, I want that wall down.
This is a load-bearing wall.
I know it's a load-bearing wall.
I'm pretty sure that this is problematic.
I want to get, you know, open concept.
Hillary, rethink this, really.
Rethink this, but everybody wants open concept. People responding, Brad, Laura, online on Facebook. Evan says, I bought my house from the original owners. They lived there for 50 years. I made energy updates, including insulation, redone the plumbing, electrical systems, finished the basement, put new floors in the whole house, redone the bathroom and kitchen, practically everything. Stuart writes to us. He says, to those of us who don't have money to upgrade our cabinetry or countertops every few years to the hot new trend, all this unnecessary spending seems somewhere between frivolous and annoying, very American, however. What about the overall trend, Brad, in terms of how much people are renovating? I mean, I know it's up now, but it was higher before the crash. Is the country on trend or in some different spot here?
Well, it's accelerating very rapidly right now. We have just done a study this year called the True Cost Report, and we found that there has been a 57% increase in the last 12 months in the average expenditure per year on home improvement per household. That's an enormous increase. And what people are doing is spending on not only more projects, but larger projects, larger scale projects. So if you think about 5 or 6, 7 years ago when the economy was weak and the housing market was still near the bottom, people were only doing the absolutely necessary repairs and projects that they really had to do. Now they're starting to take on what I call the discretionary projects, more lifestyle-oriented projects. And because they've seen such a large increase in most markets in the country and their home value, they now have this equity that they can draw from, and they feel justified in indulging themselves a little bit. And then we can also break it down by generation. We found that, again, we talked about the two 900-pound gorillas, the
boomers and millennials.
Boomers. Mm-hmm. And the boomers spend the most at $5,600 per year per average household, and that's across both owners and non-owners. So it's so the number for owners would be higher. And then millennials spend the second highest amount compared to all the other generations at just over $5,000 a year.
It's real money. Of course, you can go much higher than that if you get into a major project. It can even get into spiritual. We heard on This Old House way back in 1984. Here was Bob Vila talking about home renovation.
After all these years doing all these projects, there's one thing that we found that's still true. More and more homeowners are improving their own homes, remodeling their houses, rather than moving up to a bigger or a different house. I can tell you from my own experience that the process can be very rewarding, both spiritually as well as economically, but it can also turn around and become a real horror show.
Spiritually rewarding or a real horror show, we all have heard the stories. Matt in Madison, Wisconsin. Matt, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I got a comment and a question.
Yeah.
The comment is, we bought a house about 4 years ago. I'm a senior millennial. We've got two kids, my wife and I. And we bought a 3-bedroom, 1-bathroom, which was a starter home, really, in Madison. The value of it, as of today, has gone up probably about $50,000 if you count what we're planning to do with a remodel that we're actually doing right now.
Okay.
And we're really excited about it, but we're basically able to pay for it by taking that equity and reinvesting it in our house. And, you know, we've also put a new roof on. We've had a new boiler or hot water heater, a new furnace. And so it just doesn't make sense for us to buy a bigger house where we're going to encounter all those problems again. So, yeah, we're growing, we're upsizing within our own house, and you can imagine having 2 bathrooms is going to be a huge benefit.
Do you have kids, Matt? So. Forgive me if I missed it. Is that why you're doing it, or what's driving you?
Yeah, absolutely. We are, we love living in a house in the city, and so we are, rather than trying to upgrade to a more expensive house, we've got 2 boys, ages 7 and 4. We're having a lot of fun with the project.
Did you call yourself a senior millennial? Did I catch that right? What does that mean?
So I was born in 82, so I'm in that group I've read stories about where they're sort of in between Gen X and millennials, but I feel more like in common with the people who played Oregon Trail when they were kids. So.
Okay, senior millennial on the line. And what are you doing? What projects do you have on the drawing board, Matt?
We are doing a whole basement remodel. So, and I've been talking about it with so many people in town that they're probably sick of hearing me about it talk on the radio. But when we bought the house, it was technically finished, but it was just not what we wanted. It didn't have a bedroom and a bathroom, so we're adding all those things. We're adding like an egress window. It's going to be really nice. It's going to add a lot of resale value, but we're looking to use it. We don't want to just do it and then sell it. Because we don't want to get back into that market. We want to enjoy the house that we're going to be in for at least another 10, 15 years.
Settling in. Matt likes where he is, and he's going to make the most of it right there. Maybe we've got a new pattern emerging here. Not up and out, but fix it up. Laura Casista with The Wall Street Journal, Brad Hunter with Home Advisor. Stand by. With us right now from Piscataway, New Jersey, is Eric Ermita. He is general contractor for HGTV's Love It or List It, one of these very popular remodeling, renovation shows. People watch them all the time. Eric Ermita, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hey, Tom. Pleasure to be on.
You're out there looking at what's – remind us of the premise of Love It or List It that gets you in the middle of renovation.
Okay. The premise comes down to you live in your home for a while, and you're a couple. You might maybe have grown out of it. One, your significant other wants to go. You want to stay. You say, well, you know what? If we fix up the house a little bit, if we knock down a few walls, put a new kitchen in, new bathroom, maybe redo the attic, basement, we'll love it. And on the other hand, your other says, I had enough of this house. It's time to move on. So as we're remodeling your home, you go out and you take a look at other homes that are for sale.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, you make the choice.
And what kind of renovations, Eric, tend to persuade people to stay where they are?
There is a wish list. And your wish list is the wish list of the homeowners is usually pretty lengthy. New bathrooms, new kitchen, knock down a few walls. I'll give you two words.
Okay.
Open concept. Everyone wants open concept today.
That means knock down the walls. So maybe you combine the living room and the dining room and the kitchen becomes one great big space.
Correct. Sight lines. People want to see you instead of walking into a home, walking through the front door and walking into a wall that might hide a kitchen or hide a dining room. What you're doing is that you're opening up the floor plan to where you could see from the front wall to the back wall, and you're creating this big open space. Your optical illusion is not – basically, you're giving your home an optical illusion.
Mm-hmm.
You're not gaining square footage per se, but your home just got bigger because you could see every corner.
Hey, I got to ask you, because I know people always want that. They're like, take down the walls, but there must be a limit to that. We played a little clip earlier where you're talking with your designer there, Hillary Farr, and you're saying, this is a load-bearing wall. And she says, I know it's a load-bearing wall. She still wants it down. Are people realistic about how many walls you can take down in a house and still have a standing house?
If you got the money, you can do the job. Let's just put it to you that way. Because a lot of time there's a budget constraint. They come in, you have, let's say, a $100,000 budget, and you have a very lengthy wish list. And by pulling down some of the major walls, they can be reconstructed with steel or I-beams or things of that nature, but it comes with a price tag. So if you're ready to have your budget and then say, well, I'd like to move that, I'd like to move that wall, I'd like to move that wall, and it comes out to where, there's a pretty heavy price tag that goes into supporting the rest of the walls, you have to be ready for that. If you're not, then you have to stay within the constraints of some walls.
All right. We've got all the pros here. If you're wondering about the market or about actual renovation and remodeling itself, we can bring you the answers right here, right now. We have plenty of people lined up for that. Anna's calling from North Augusta, South Carolina. Anna, thank you very much for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Good. What's your story?
We just bought a house probably 3 years ago, me and my husband, and we have six kids.
Okay.
And we have the greatest yard. He's got a shop in the back, perfect school zone. We just need a little more room now.
Mm-hmm.
But we've been looking around, and We can't find it. If we find the yard, it's not big enough of a house. And if we do find even close to what we might want, we're talking three times as much as we paid and going into a 30-year loan when we're pretty good at a 15-year and we like our house. So yep. We've just decided, you know what, let's quit looking and let's talk about building on now.
There's the two of you plus six kids. That's a pretty big posse. How many square feet do you dream of having?
You know, we don't need it to be that big. I am not a person that needs each of my kids to have a room to themselves.
Yep.
But maybe a separate, you know, master and ensuite. That would be good. But other than that, I don't want to knock out all the walls. I like having a little separation.
This is hilarious. You had six kids, but what you're dreaming of is a master ensuite with a bathroom attached. Eric, Anna here is, you know, wants a deluxe place for she and the hubby to come home to. She's not looking to put in new bunks for the kids.
How many bedrooms do you currently have?
We have three good sized bedrooms.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so
we
you're
have
just
the
looking
boys for in one bedroom, the girls in another bedroom. And we have switched out. We have a fourth room, but we've switched that into like a family size closet laundry room. My husband knocked
good.
All of that out and yeah. rebuilt closet area in there to eliminate the drawers and such out of their bedrooms.
Well, if you don't want to move and you're not really looking to do a major renovation, do you have a room that you can go upstairs in the attic?
No, we don't. We did think about building upwards, but looking into it, I'm thinking that's going to cost way more than just building out. Because, I mean, we have a huge, great yard, and that's come in to be a problem. We're not finding the yard. We're not finding the inside space. And the school district, for us, is a huge deal. So if we do find something, it's too far out of our school district.
Yeah, Anna, we've got it. We got the picture of the six kids, the house, the desire for that master ensuite with like more room and the big bedroom for you and the hubby, I guess, and the bathroom right there. Brad, how popular is that these days to go for, you know, the big master bedroom setup?
Well, you know, I want to say just about the last couple of callers, this one and the last one, the kinds of projects that they're talking about to a degree are emblematic of 2017 compared to, say, 2010, 2011. You know, to a degree, the ensuite or the open concept knocking out walls, that's a perfect example of the quintessential lifestyle improvement. And that's the kind of thing that people are taking on now that they didn't do back then. And it's interesting, too, when you need more room, you can either convert a basement into living space, an attic, garage. And it's interesting, too, because the Matt from Wisconsin was talking about how he's doing a basement remodel. And he's, as we said, the older millennial. How did he say it? Mature millennial.
Senior millennial.
Like. Senior millennial. That's what it was.
Yeah.
I love that term. And write that down. But it's interesting because the millennials, according to our survey work, are 89% more likely to do a basement remodel than the general population.
Huh.
Almost twice as likely to do a basement job. And I think partly what the millennials are doing is buying older homes, and sometimes they have small closets and sometimes small bedrooms, but that's what they can afford. And sometimes those are in poor repair too. And so they'll put money into redoing the basement to create more space, and sometimes even create a space they can rent out to one of their friends or whatever and help defray some of the costs of their mortgage and ownership costs.
Hey, come on over. Pay some rent for my basement. Diane in Groveland, Massachusetts. Diane, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to share my very recent experience with selling our old home and buying our new home.
Okay.
We started out with the three-bedroom, about 13 to 1,900 square feet, and had thought about remodeling, but it would have been very expensive. We would have had to add another floor to get the, you know, ensuite master that everybody wants. And we just decided that if we went further away from Boston, we moved from Melrose, we would get a lot more space for a lot less money, and we did. It wasn't as competitive a market further out from Boston. When we went to sell our home, we had about 140 people go through our house.
Wow.
We ended up with six bids. And the lowest bid was 25 over asking. The one that we accepted was 67 over asking.
Wow. Congratulations. But you were scared of remodeling. Why were you scared of the remodeling path, Diane? Why'd you go the other way?
Well, I'm not scared of remodeling. I actually kind of enjoy the process.
Okay.
Call me a masochist, but we just thought, you know, it's a home that was built in about 1958, and we know that some of the wiring was kind of funky when we had moved in 96, and we just were leery of getting involved into a big process, adding another floor on top of it, and, you know, what we might run into, what would run up the costs.
Yeah.
HGTV.
Hey, congratulations on your good luck. I guess it grows out of others' bad luck. All those 140 people lined up and only one gets it for way over. But that's the way it's working right now. Eric, do people run into cost overrun issues when they start to act on their dreams in renovation?
Oh, they sure do. Because once you open up some walls, you never know what's behind it.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about home renovation this hour, booming as Americans stay put, can't or won't move. They're fixing up the house, changing the fixtures, blowing out the walls, open concept, mixing it up at home. Eric Aramita is with us, general contractor for HGTV's Love It or List It. He's seen just about every kind of home renovation challenge out there. Laura Cosisto is with us from the Wall Street Journal. She's been writing about the big demographic and market forces that are leading people, many, to remodel or renovate instead of buy or move. Of course, it's just they're just sealing a whole lot of people right out of the market if they can't afford to be in at all. And Brad Hunter is with us from Boynton Beach, chief economist at Home Advisor. We've got lots of response here online. Amy says, I live in Charleston, South Carolina, where 45 people per day are moving in. The housing market is insane. I tried to buy a house 2 years ago, and a $500,000 four-bedroom house would need at least $100,000 worth of renovations. She's not even there. I mean, others saying the same thing. Brad writes to us, how can people possibly celebrate rising home costs? How can this be sustainable with stagnant wages? And that tension is very real. Others are diving in and doing it. They've got the means. Justin says new construction homes are charmless. So we bought and renovated a 1920 house with a $200,000 loan. Good luck, Justin. And Amy says, just finished a partial bath update. We'll do insulation. Wiring next house is built in 48. Dreaming about adding a garage. But the concrete pad is expensive. Yeah, there's lots of moving parts once you get into it. David in Towson, Maryland. David, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for this conversation today. I think it's important. I find, as I'm a house flipper, and I find the main conversation I have with people is to talk to them about the realities of the market and to be a little bit of a contrarian. You know, stocks and... Oh, go ahead.
You're a house flipper, so just define what you do for us.
So I identify properties that tend to need a lot of work. I purchase those houses and fix them up and sell it to an owner-occupant.
Okay. And the lessons that you want to share?
The lesson is I have lots of access to money, and I have no deals where the math works. And me and my business partner had a really strong conversation about not changing our math, not increasing our offer prices, because real estate is a lot of risk. It's a very complicated business with a lot of moving parts.
Wait, so you're saying the market is so high right now, you can't find anywhere to get in there and do your fix-up and flip trick?
100%. If you still believe in math, and this is a business of math, which I do, there's not a lot of deals. We actually do have an industry term for people who are overpaying for property, especially that are flippers, where we use the same math that they use.
Yeah.
And the numbers don't work. Someone will work for 9 months to a year to basically lose $5,000 to $10,000. It's kind of insane.
What's the term?
But a lot of people who are buying now, they're called dumb money.
Mm. Yeah.
Unfortunately.
I got it. So if people own a house already and they're thinking of whether they should renovate, does that put them in the same boat as you with the answer being no or not?
That's a great point. I would say this. Contractors are busy. So if you're being a little bit of a contrarian, I think now is the time to save your money, pay off your debt, Don't go into debt to do a renovation, and just be patient. You know, there will be a time when contractors are not as busy and prices will go down. So you can chase it like everyone else, and you could be go through the frustration of getting the high bids. But I think it's going to be a really good idea for anyone who could just be patient, take this time to educate themselves about building materials, understanding how to negotiate with a contractor, how to separate material from labor, and to really get a handle on what things should cost. I think it's, I can almost renovate a home for what a lot of DIYers will charge to, will pay to renovate a kitchen.
Well, there's a little hold your horses advice from a Maryland house flipper. David, I really appreciate your call. Laura Casisto at the Wall Street Journal, you're listening there. What about the market? I mean, people are looking at the stock market these days, those who care about that, and saying it looks kind of high. It looks like it could be in for a tumble. What about the housing market? I mean, if you're thinking about whether to put money into it, you don't want to put money into it when the value is going to be tumbling on the other side.
Yeah, so nationally, I would say I'm not worried that we're in a massive housing bubble of the kind that we had in 2008. But real estate, as we all know, is very local. And for sure, there are lots of pockets, lots of places where we've seen prices go up by double digits for the last few years, where I would be wary of, certainly I would not undertake a renovation thinking that you're going to see a 15-20% price increase, year over year. I think we're probably coming to the end of the cycle, and I don't think we're going to see a huge crash. I don't think we're going to see home values fall 25% again, but I do think that we're probably going to see a bit of a tapering off. So he talked about that. I think crucial things to look at are if you're paying for your renovation in cash, which 90% of homeowners are doing, as long as you're taking that out of savings and you're not draining your savings account, you should be fine. We're seeing a small uptick in people using credit cards and a small uptick in people using home equity lines of credit. And that's really what got people in trouble the last time around. So for sure, not to say that it's always a bad idea, but you want to be very, very cautious about it. And nobody should be embarking on a renovation this late in the housing cycle and thinking that they're going to see the kind of $50,000 home price increases that some of the callers have talked about seeing over the last couple of years.
90% of renovations paid for with cash. That's a different story from a decade ago. Melissa in Atlanta, Georgia. Melissa, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I basically want to echo many of the previous callers. We bought a house about 2 years ago, and me and my husband are also senior millennials. We're about 39,
okay.
So just kind of on the cusp.
Yep.
And we bought a house about 2 years ago, and before that, we didn't have any children, and it's a little... We're in a very historical neighborhood of Grant Park, and this 1920s Victorian cottage, I guess. And we're busting at the seams because about a year ago, I had two twin boys. So
okay.
We don't know what to do. Every day I look at Redfin, and we could build on. We have a big yard, but it's outrageous. Like every day I look at Redfin, and houses in our neighborhood are more than $500,000.
So what's outrageous? Is the cost of adding on outrageous? Have you had it,
What we would want to do, like your guests are saying, we don't have an open concept, which I actually am one of the few people that didn't want that when we were looking.
Okay.
And so, because I like the history, I like the separate rooms, formal dining room, have dinner parties,
mm-hmm,
that kind
yep,
of thing.
Yep.
But now that we have the boys, it's like, okay, maybe we could... We did like a white remodel on our kitchen just to make it livable for us. And then now it's like, well, we could build off the back onto our kitchen and do like a great room, but we could also go up, but our house might not have we'd have to restructure so much because it's an old house. And we were scared that if we would have to take out a home equity loan.
Hey, Melissa, let me take it to our great contractor, Eric Aramita. If it's the up or out question, expand upward or out into the backyard, Eric, how do you begin to size that up?
Well, going up, all right, it depends on what you're putting upstairs. Are you putting your bedrooms upstairs or going out? Are you making a master bath or a master bedroom on the first floor, making it to where it's easy access to the kitchen, mm-hmm, and things of that nature? Or do you want a bigger kitchen? So it all depends on what you're building and why you're building out or up.
And what about the way you do it? Let's say you're going to go out. You're going to there's plenty of backyard there. Melissa may want to build into it. Are there more or less expensive ways of doing that? She's talking about everything from bedroom space to a great room.
Well, going out requires a foundation. So you're going to have to do, you know, foundation work. You're going to have to extend the home out. You have framing to be done. You have finishes on the outside. You have a roof that has to be done. On the upside, doing a roof raise, you rip off the roof and you continue up. The only thing that's different is that you don't need a foundation.
So you save on that front. It's a matter of convenience where the thing is going to be for the element of life you want to serve with it. Brad, when you look at things that people are doing, I mean, we always hear about this hierarchy of remodeling efforts that will pay back or won't pay back. And I guess they always say kitchen and bath are the most likely to pay back. Is that holding true these days, Brad?
Well, yeah. I mean, you want to gauge how much you spend on a renovation on a couple of levels. Number one, are you trying to I call it nesting is investing. Are you putting money into the residence to try to increase its value for resale? Or are you going to be staying for 7 years or more, or 5 years or more, and you'll get a lot of benefit out of it yourself, a lot of enjoyment out of it yourself? And that's going to really determine what your rate of return is. We find overall that a big high-dollar kitchen remodel doesn't pay back very high relative to some other things that you can do to improve your home. The best bang for your buck in terms of getting money back out would be things like doing a cabinet refacing instead of replacing the cabinets. Costs a lot less and still looks just as good. You can do cosmetic things. You know, painting definitely has a very strong return on investment. You should also think in terms of using stock cabinetry instead of custom. That can give you a better return. But one of the most one of the biggest return on investment items is insulation. It doesn't cost very much, and it really can pay back as you're the owner of the home. And then later on when you sell it, you can actually get a pretty good proportion of what you put into that back out.
Paint and insulation. Keep it simple there. Leon in Lovettsville, Virginia. Leon, thank you for calling. You're on.
Hi, John. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'm a professional builder that's actually switched from professional building to flipping. Instead of flipping to sell, I buy distressed homes, I fix them, and then I rent them. And the reason that I was pushed this direction from building custom homes is because of the competition from big companies like Ryan Homes and Town Toll Brothers and Taylor-Vinian to build fields of homes in a week, large homes at high cost that are relatively low quality. And I've just found that fixing an old home, you find the quality materials, you find the better foundations, you find block and brick walls, you get a better return on investment in general because you don't have to buy a home that 10 years down the road, you don't have to put a new kitchen in, a new bathroom in, insulation, just like the gentleman said, in the walls, which is a big deal.
Yeah. So you buy distressed, you fixed up, and you rent instead of selling. Why rent instead of sell, Leon? Leon, are you there, my friend? I don't know the answer. What the answer to that's going to be. Brad, have you got an idea?
Well, it depends on what the individual's goals are. If you want to have a kind of a repetitive, you know, ongoing stream of income, then renting is a logical choice. And we are seeing that more and more, not only by individual investors and small to medium-sized flippers, but some of the large investment companies that are involved in this are renovating and renting as well.
That keeps the market tight. Eric, talk about what gets people excited these days when it comes to home renovation and remodeling. Brad talked about what might make economic sense, but there's more to it than that. What's hot these days? What gets people going?
What gets people going? A big kitchen always gets people going, especially the ladies. You know, nice big open area, nice big island, sit down, entertain. You know, entertaining these days, I think, goes a very, very long way. We live in a more not so formal world anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, again, the open concept, hanging out, kicking up your feet, looking into the living room, not into the formal living room, having a space where, you know, everyone kind of congregates. You could see everyone. Everybody's hanging out. That's what's exciting people these days. Mixing old and new excites people these days. You know, maybe there's a family heirloom that you want to keep, but you want to mix in your modern area that you're fixing up today.
Okay.
That excites people. So there's a lot of and just living. People want to live. You know, when I grew up, we grew up with plastic on our couches. You know, we weren't allowed to use them. When I got married, I finally sat on them. Today, we don't live in that type of world. We live in something where everyone wants to use it, the kids, the family, everybody comes in. And I would say that that's the love of the home. That's what's exciting.
What about the smart house stuff, Eric? Are people paying for that to bring in all the digital electronics and stuff?
Oh, 100%. Smart homes are on the rise. You know, you have your solar panels, which are going on the roof today. You have the electronic-wise, you have your smart homes that are getting run by apps. You have the alarm systems that you could open and close your doors. You have these ring type of doorbells where you can see what's going on 24/7. It's 100% on the rise. And if you look back from where we were 10 years ago to today, it's a major, major difference. So even, you know, we speak of millennials. Millennials growing up, I'm not a millennial, by the way, but we went from a rotary telephone to no telephone today. Everyone carries around a cell phone.
Yeah.
The millennials don't know the difference. They look at a rotary phone and go, what's that? Yeah, I'm joking when I say that, but it's so different. So we see the big difference. The younger generation really doesn't see the big difference, and they're going to only want more because they don't know the difference. So the technology and the smart homes are going to get better, better, and better.
Laura, do you see any end to this trend of more investment in renovation? I guess all things end in housing, but where do you think we are in this surge?
So I think there are two ways that it can end. One is good and one is bad.
Okay.
So I'll start with the bad news, I think. One way it could end is just that we enter another recession. We see home values plateau or start to fall, and people just don't want to put that kind of money into their homes again, and we enter sort of another kind of freeze period. But the good news is I think we could also see it just start to taper off because we get more inventory. We're seeing builders very slowly ramp up construction. We are seeing more starter homes being built. At some point, those boomers are going to sell their homes. And so I think over the next couple of years, we could start to see inventory loosen up. And of course, people will still renovate, but maybe that won't be their only option anymore.
63 million more people in this country today than in 1994, but the same number of homes. That puts the squeeze on and leaves a lot of people renovating. And we've heard great stories about that in this hour. And I'm grateful for the insight and for the stories. Laura Casisto, you got a startle on this from The Wall Street Journal. I want to thank you very much for being with us today. Thanks a lot for coming on.
For sure.
Brad Hunter with Home Advisor, joining us from Boynton Beach, Florida. Brad, thanks very much for all your work there and for being with us.
My pleasure. Thanks, Tom.
And Eric Aramita. He's general contractor for HGTV's Love It or List It. We'll be watching, Eric. Thanks a lot for being with us today.
You're welcome, Tom. And remember, always to love it.
Okay, we'll try. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Hi, I'm Ron Suskind.
And I'm Heather Cox Richardson.
We're the hosts of Freak Out and Carry On, a new politics and history podcast from WBUR.
Hey, thanks for sticking around for this preview from our show. If you like what you hear, you can subscribe to Freak Out and Carry On wherever you get your podcasts.
Take a listen to this excerpt. Let's welcome our guest, Nick Ameli, director of the Shorenstein Center on Media, Politics, and Public Policy at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government, author of The End of Big, How the Internet Makes David the New Goliath. Welcome, Nico.
It's great to be here.
So, Nico, there's a widely accepted narrative that the media enabled Trump during his rise, during his campaign and his victory. But also, haven't they been enabling him during those first 100 days? Tell me what the evidence shows as to how Trump has been signing up the media as his handmaiden.
So we've done five studies, all of 2015, 2016, and the first 100 days of Trump, looking at media coverage, mainstream major media coverage of Trump, everything from Fox News, Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Washington Post, USA Today, et cetera. The truth is the media during the campaign overwhelmingly gave Trump positive coverage. Mm-hmm. However, one of the reasons for that is that a lot of the stories were driven by polling. And the story was always that Trump was rising in the polls.
New CNN ORC polls very much about Donald Trump's huge lead as the choice of Republicans for the presidential nomination.
Despite all kind of conventional wisdom to the contrary, he was winning. And it won in the primaries. And so that favors Trump in a really overwhelmingly dramatic way.
However, how about the first 100 days?
In the first 100 days, the coverage is overwhelmingly negative. However, most of the time in the first 100 days, the only person that the media quotes on Trump is Trump. I think it's 6% of the time they quote a Democrat, 4% of the time a congressional Republican, almost no policy experts. The stories about Trump quote Trump. And so it's a very weird dynamic in that sense. It is overwhelmingly negative, but it's also all Trump all the time.
It's a reality show. They're going to the star.
Compared to the last three presidents, he dominates news coverage. So much more of the nightly newscast is about Trump than in the first 100 days than any prior president. It's really astonishing, almost to the exclusion of all other news.
I mean,
I'm talking about sports news and weather news. Like, he crushes it.
Well, you know, here's the thing. Is somebody mentioned sports news. I'll just mention this. Is that years ago, an ABC producer, I did stuff for Ted Koppel, said, why do people watch sports on television? I said, well, I don't know. It's neatly lined. They're winners and losers. No. It's the only thing that occurs on television. It actually happens. Everything else is produced. Trump occurs on television. You can't take your eyes off of him.
In the 2 years of the presidential campaign, it doesn't matter which candidate or which issue. Pick any candidate, and Trump is quoted 2 to 3 times more in an article about that candidate than the candidate themselves.
Good God.
Trump is quoted more on Ted Cruz than Ted Cruz is. Trump is quoted more on Hillary Clinton than Hillary Clinton
is. He had
is.
The best lines. Lying Ted, crooked Hillary, low energy Jeb. I mean, you know, you can't not credit a kind of twisted genius in managing that. He hung that around their neck in bully fashion. That's your name now.
I think a crucial question for the media is how they will cover the presidential campaign in 2020. Will they do anything differently?
Well, the problem is if you are either covering Trump or covering the resistance to Trump, he is still defining the narrative.
That's right.